So, the book of Ruth, great book. I love the fact that it's so ordinary and that my ordinary life can fit into it. And I can see something of God's redemptive purposes. I mean, we're like these massive heroic guys, Abraham and all these guys. But then there's like just Ruth, you know, this Moabite woman who kind of gleans. That's what she does. And I can relate there. I can like put myself, it's just this ordinary story. But actually it turns out to be this incredible redemptive story. And we see how God takes the ordinary and brings something of his redemptive purposes through. So I want to focus mainly on chapter 4. But before I get to chapter 4, I just want to give a little bit of a background. So from chapter 1, 2, 3, like how did we get to chapter 4 and what's the story? Don't want to assume that everyone knows the story of Ruth. But it starts in chapter 1 with this incredible statement in that in the time of the judges, there was a famine in the land. And if we go to the book just before Ruth, it's the book of Judges. And that book ends by saying, and there was no king, and everyone did as they saw fit. So right in the very first sentence of the book of Ruth, we see two things lacking. No king, no food. And then this family, this guy by the name of Elimelech and his wife Naomi, his two sons, Mahlon and Chilion, they reckon it's a good idea to go to Moab. Leave Bethlehem, let's head to Moab. And I think it's quite significant that the Bible states Moab, because we got to know what's Moab about. Moab started in Genesis 19 when Lot slept with his daughters. And there was, as a result of that incest, there was two boys that was born. And one of them was Moab. The other one was Ammon. And the Moabites and the Ammonites became the greatest enemy of the Israelites. So when we talk about Moab, we're talking about an Israelite family leaving Bethlehem and going to that place that started with incest. And we can go through so many scriptures and highlight what that meant. And I think, you know, God was quite purposeful in the amount of references to Moab. In Numbers 25, it speaks about Moabite woman who seduced Israelite men and pulled them away from the assembly. They married those Moabite women and they started worshiping the Moabite gods. And as a result of them being seduced out of that, 24,000 Israelite men died. That's significant in the history of a nation. You know, that makes a nation kind of feel, well, hold on a second. Moab? I think not. This is the Moab that this family goes to. And in Deuteronomy 23, it speaks about the Ammonites and the Moabites not being allowed into the assembly of the Lord. So there would be times, and Ruth is one of them, when a Moabite person would come into the Israelite community, but they wouldn't be allowed into the assembly. They wouldn't be allowed into the assembly of the Lord. And there would be this very strong ruling to say, up until the 10th generation, so you kind of come here, you're going to be on the fringe, and you can live, and you can have children, your children can have children. 10 generations later, only then will we consider whether you can be part of the assembly of the Lord. The Egyptians, the ruling with them, is if they came anywhere near, they would consider them at the third generation. The Egyptians are the guys that put the Israelites under slavery and held them captive. And so they're like three generations. Moabites, 10 generations. You're not coming anywhere near the assembly of the Lord. You don't deserve it. Nehemiah, in Nehemiah 13, he talks about finding Israelite men who married Moabite women. And it says, and I hurled down curses upon them. I rebuked them. The Israelite men. In fact, I beat some of them up. I pulled their hair out. How dare you? Go to Moab. Elimelech, what are you thinking? This is where the story starts. This incredible relocation to Moab. And then it says in verse 3, now Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died. It's kind of like the consequence of bad decisions. And she was left with her two sons. They married Moabite women, one named Orpah and the other Ruth. After they had lived there for about 10 years, both Mahlon and Chilion also died. More consequence. And Naomi was left with her two sons, without her two sons and her husband. So what happens within this first few verses of the book of Ruth, no king, no food, and now no family. Because you've got three funerals and three childless widows. Naomi and her two daughters-in-law. I mean, that's not going anywhere. It's like you're going to need a husband. Something's got to happen here for there to be something going beyond this. So childless, and both Ruth and Orpah are barren. For 10 years, there's no children. So things are not looking pretty. And then there's this realization they hear from Moab that the Lord has come to the aid of the people. And there's only two times where there's direct reference to the Lord in the book of Ruth. There's this time where the Lord actually provides food. So that one thing that's lacking. Now God comes through, he gives them food, and they realize actually we need to get back to Bethlehem because there's food there. So they go back, and all the people are like, hey, Naomi's back. And she says, don't call me Naomi. Don't call me that, because that means pleasant. I'd prefer for you to call me Mara. That means bitter. Because I left you with hope. I've come back with bitterness. I left you, yes, looking for food, but there was a fullness of life. I had a husband. I had a family. I'm now empty. I've got nothing. I'm empty. Like, don't call me Naomi. You got it all wrong. And she states their position. Both her and Ruth are in this very precarious position of bitterness, emptiness. They don't have a husband. There's no future for them. Who's going to look after them? But they are back in Bethlehem. And then the chapter 2 starts where we get introduced to this man called Boaz. And he's described as a man of standing. Because they need a man of standing. And this incredible introduction of this man is followed by Naomi, by chance, it says, working in Boaz's field. Actually, that's just the providential hand of God behind the scenes, making sure that Ruth is in the right field. Of all the fields she could have worked in, he makes sure she's in Boaz's field. Amen. She finds favor in Boaz's eyes. She can't believe it. She's like, hey, listen, I'm a foreigner. How can I find favor in your eyes? She goes back to Naomi. She says, Naomi, you won't believe it. I was in this field, and I was working for this guy, and I just found favor in his eyes. And she's like, well, who was it? And she says, Boaz. And Naomi is so excited. She says, you don't understand who Boaz is. He's a kinsman redeemer. Or in other translations, a guardian redeemer or a covenant redeemer. All these descriptions mean the exact same thing. He was a next of kin. He was a relative, a kinsman. That's what that means, a next of kin. And what a kinsman redeemer represented, it was just a legal term that meant he would be a person who would be able to help someone who's in the position like Naomi and Ruth was in. Destitute, poor, without a future, he would be able to redeem their situation. And she immediately recognizes the name, says, hey, he's part of the clan of Elimelech. We're family. There's relative. He's a kinsman. He can redeem us. And then we're going to the famous chapter 3, awkward, I know, but let's go there. She says to Naomi, Naomi says to Ruth, listen, go to Boaz. He's going to be on the threshing floor. And let's see what happens. But make yourself pretty, because I'm hoping this is going to go to a place where he can marry you. But you got to put yourself out there. So clean your act up. Let's see where this goes. So Naomi, she shaves her pits, washes. Seriously, she's a Middle Eastern Moabite woman. I'm sure she looked like she had Macy Gray in a headlock. So she cleans up big time, puts on some perfume, Coco Chanel, and she makes her way to the threshing floor, singing, let's Marvin Gaye and get it on. So this is an awkward chapter, and I'm going for the awkward, okay? She gets to where he is, and she goes into stealth mode. So he's sleeping. She doesn't want to wake him. Somehow, I don't know how she gets this right, she gets to, like, lift his garment, move it off his feet, puts it down there, and then lies by him. Like, I'll probably sleep through that, but it's just weird. It's like very weird. So she's lying there, and then the Bible says, and he was startled. He woke up. If you ask me, and it's not based on any commentaries that I read, it's just common sense. I think it was the cool breeze on his legs that woke him up. And you can imagine as he wakes up that, you know, kind of like, whew, who's that? I don't know how many of you got kids, but if you got kids, you will know that happens often. You just wake up in the morning and it's like, hello, Dad. Whoa! It was one of these moments. And so Boaz's like, who are you? He's like trying to wake up. And she's like, Ruth, I'm your servant. And then she says this amazing thing. She says, spread the corner of your garment over me, since you are a kinsman redeemer of our family. What an amazing statement. What she was actually saying is, please propose to me. This is when you think it could get more awkward. She's like, I would like for you to spread your garment over me. That's basically, I want you to cover me. I want you to be my protector. I want to come under your covering. I want you to be my husband, but I kind of know you need to initiate that, so here's your cue. And Boaz is like super keen. He's like, I'm game. But then he presents her with this hurdle. And he says, there is just one thing, though. Before we get ahead of ourselves, there's another kinsman. There's another next of kin. And he's closer than I. So they had this system where the kinsman, it would be like brother, uncle, cousin, second cousin. So depending on who you were and where you would fit in this kind of family tree or whatever, that would dictate whether you would have first dibs or not. So this kinsman, this no-name guy, he was closer than Boaz. And Boaz knew how it worked. He said, I would love to, but I can't until we've checked with this guy. If he wants to, then that's where it's going. So here we are in Ruth chapter 4. That's where we've now got to in terms of the unfolding of the story. And in Ruth 4 verse 1, it says this. Meanwhile, Boaz went up to the town gate and sat down there just as the guardian redeemer he had mentioned came along. So here comes Mr. No Name. Boaz said, come over here, my friend, and sit down. So he went over and sat down. Boaz took 10 of the elders of the town and said, sit here, and they did so. Then he said to the guardian redeemer, Naomi, who has come back from Moab, is selling the piece of land that belonged to our relative Elimelech. I thought I should bring the matter to your attention and suggest that you buy it in the presence of these seated here and in the presence of the elders of my people. If you will redeem it, do so. But if you will not, tell me, so I will know. For no one has the right to do it except you, and I am next in line. Mr. No Name says, I will redeem it. It's good. Let's do this. Then Boaz said, here comes little sneaky ninja Boaz. On the day that you buy the land from Naomi, you also acquire Ruth. Wait for it. Pause for effect. The Moabite. Now he's talking to an Israeli man. The Moabite. At this, the guardian redeemer said, then I cannot redeem it, because I might endanger my own estate. You redeem it yourself. I cannot do it. So he was keen, super keen. Property, yeah, I'll redeem. I'll do it. But there is this Moabite lady. Oh no, sorry, I can't. I'm out. Then in verse 9, it says, then Boaz announced to the elders and all the people, "Today you are witnesses that I have bought from Naomi all the property of Elimelech, Chilion and Mahlon. I have also acquired Ruth the Moabite, Mahlon's widow, as my wife, in order to maintain the name of the dead with his property, so that his name will not disappear from among his family or from his hometown. Today you are witnesses." So Boaz redeems it. We're getting so excited about the story and Ruth and Boaz and its threshing floor and its Marvin Gaye and all those kind of things. And then, hold on a second, there's a hurdle. And he says, "I will redeem it." You're like, damn, wasn't meant to turn out like that. And then Boaz comes with this little hurdle. She's a Moabite. And he's out. He says, "I can't." So yeah, you've got two kinsmen redeemers, one named Boaz and the other one without a name. No name kinsman redeemer. Similarities, but then this very stark contrast, this distinction between the two. So where's it similar? They both had the right to redeem. Boaz says it. "There's no one else but you who has the right to redeem, and I'm next in line." So he states it outright. We both have the right to redeem. The second thing is that they both had the resources to be able to redeem. So when no name hears, he's like, "I'm in. I can do it. I can buy the property. I got the spandulux. I'll sort this out. Lekker." And we hear, like, further down in chapter 4 that Boaz also has the resources because he actually bought it. So resources, not a problem. Similar in right, similar in resource. Where the distinction came in was the resolve. Because Boaz had the resolve to exercise his right and pour out his resource. No name kinsman redeemer didn't have that resolve. What I mean by resolve, it's like this unction to function, this thing that builds within you to say, "I'm going to follow this thing through. I'm going to make it happen. I'm committing myself to this." Boaz had the resolve. No name kinsman didn't have it. Can you imagine what it would have meant for Ruth and for Naomi if there was only the one kinsman, the no-name guy, who was there, a kinsman redeemer? He has the right. He's got the resource. Will you do it? Heck no. Why not? I just don't have it in with me. It's like it's not going to happen. This is going to endanger my estate. Just this very selfish kind of, it's like it's all about my estate. I can't actually do that. No. It's not going to work out well for me. Boaz is also an Israeli man. He's in the exact same position. He's also a kinsman redeemer. Has the right, has the resources. But the difference with Boaz is he has the resolve. He says, "I will redeem it." His words to Ruth is, "As sure as the Lord lives, I will do it." It's exactly what Ruth needed. It's exactly what Naomi needed. Because what good is the right and the resource if you don't have the resolve? Would have meant nothing to them. So Boaz comes through as this incredible man of standing. He exercises his right, pours out the resources needed. And both those things are just completely backed up by this incredible resolve to make it happen. And we got to realize all three are key. Because you can have the resolve, but if you don't have the right to redeem, nothing's going to happen. Or you can have the right, you can have the resolve, but if you don't have the resource, if you don't have the ability to bring it to pass, well then, it's not going to happen. All three's got to happen in order for there to be redemption. Let's look at the second half of Ruth 4. The consequence, the resulting blessing that comes as a result of Boaz being this incredible kinsman redeemer. It says in verse 11, "Then the elders and all the people at the gate said, 'We are witnesses. May the Lord make the woman who is coming into your home like Rachel and Leah, who together built up the family of Israel. May you have standing in Ephrathah and be famous in Bethlehem. Through the offspring the Lord gives you by this young woman, may your family be like that of Perez, whom Tamar bore to Judah.' So Boaz took Ruth and she became his wife. When he made love to her, the Lord enabled her to conceive, and she gave birth to a son. So amazing. I love the fact that this book has chapters of trials and chapters of uncertainty and chapters of where the heck is all of this going. One verse. Because you see, when God's redemptive purpose hits, it's all that's needed. In one verse, he opens up her womb and she's able to conceive. And that lack of family in chapter one, it's now been sorted. So God, he provided the food and he provides for her to have a son. The two times in Ruth where the Lord is explicitly mentioned and he provides for the food that's lacking and for the family that's lacking. In that moment, one verse. It's amazing how God works because he gives so much to the chapters of the trials and the details of, and then one verse, got married, had a baby. Boom. For us, it's almost like we'll spend all the time talking about how they got married and the detail of the wedding and, oh, how she looked. And then it's like, oh, pregnant, and what are those things called? Kitchen teas and I don't know, whatever, baby showers. I heard today about nappy bras. I promise. That's beautiful. Didn't know that existed, a nappy bra. One verse. She got married, had a baby. Because God's redemption, when he comes through, when we encounter him, there's just something that takes hold. It's like only from heaven can that happen. And it says, the woman said to Naomi, praise be to the Lord, who this day has not left you without a guardian redeemer. May he become famous throughout Israel. He will renew your life and sustain you in your old age. For your daughter-in-law, who loves you and who is better to you than seven sons, has given him birth. Then Naomi took the child in her arms and cared for him. The woman living there said, Naomi has a son, and they named him Obed. He was the father of Jesse, the father of David. Whoa. I wish we could read these stories like for the first time. Like I could block my memory out and like I don't know how it's going to end. Like you're paging and then it's like Obed, whoever, Jesse, kind of sounds familiar. David, whoa. The David? David? Yeah, it's that David. It's him. What was the three things missing in chapter one? No what? Come on, shout it out. No king. No food. No family. No food sorted. No family sorted. No king sorted. Because that's God's provision. When it comes to God's provision, he doesn't just redeem our souls. He redeems every aspect of our lives. King David. Who would have thought? And we look at this contrast from chapter 1 to chapter 4 and this unfolding story of redemption between chapter 1 and chapter 4, and it's just so amazing. If we look at Ruth's life, it's like widow, chapter 1, chapter 4, husband, covered under his garment, cared for, protected. She's childless in chapter 1. Now she's fruitful. I mean, did you get the prayer over her, Rachel and Leah? Like Rachel and Leah? There was 12 sons between the two of them. Not just any sons. The leaders of the 12 tribes of Israel. It was like a serious blessing, a serious prayer over. And all of a sudden, fruitful. Chapter 1, she's excluded. She's on the outside. Remember what I said? You'll never be allowed to enter the assembly of the Lord to the 10th generation. Yes, she's included directly by a kinsman redeemer. She's married to him. And how does this end? Verse 18. This then is the family line of Perez. Perez, Hezron, Ram, Abinadab, Nashon, Salmon, Boaz, Obed, Jesse, David. Count how many. Have a guess. How many generations? 10. So God turns that whole thing around. He says, 10 generations of exclusion? No. I'm putting us straight into these very key 10 generations that I'm listing here and that you will find in Matthew 1 as well. Exact same names. He reverses that entire thing. She goes from this precarious position to a position of abundant provision. It's beautiful. Her life completely changed. And Naomi, she goes from being cursed to being completely blessed. She says, the woman around us, this daughter of in-law of yours, it's like she's better than 7 sons. You know, the number 7, like in the Bible, that's like the number for completion. That's the number for fullness. She's better than 7 sons. She goes from bitterness to hope. Chapter 1, don't call me Naomi. Call me Mara. Chapter 4, call me Grandmara. Who would have thought? Naomi's Chinese. Grandmother. Oh. What a turnaround. She's a grandmother. No longer bitter. No longer empty. There's a fullness. Not just a fullness in her life, because she's now part of a family and this Kingsman Redeemer has come through and she's back in the swing of things, but she's actually got a child in her arms. Obed. Great name, Obed. She goes from being disgraced to honored, and everything is turned around for Ruth and Naomi. You see, I think part of our problem is we don't like being in the chapter 1 of the story of our lives. And we fail to see that it's actually part of a greater story. God's unfolding story of redemption. That's why that book is there. That you can see that I can face chapter 1s, I can go through different seasons of my life, and things can seem like it's all falling apart, but behind the scenes, it just so happened that Ruth was working in the field that belonged to Boaz, because God is just orchestrating things behind the scenes. We must know there's a chapter 4. Where things go from emptiness to fullness, from bitterness to hope. Complete redemption. Love this book. And you know that this story is not where it ends. Ruth 1, no king. Ruth 4, King David. Matthew 1, King Jesus. King Jesus. Boaz is just a picture of Jesus. Jesus is the Boaz of the Bible. He's the ultimate Boaz. He's the ultimate Kinsman Redeemer in the story of our redemption. And we look to him and we say, thank you that we can be in this privileged place. And we look to him and we realize, Kinsman Redeemer? Yeah. What about Jesus? Well, firstly, he's got the right. In Galatians 4, it says this, but when the set time had fully come, when the set time had fully come, he was ordained, part of God's plan. God sent, so he was commissioned, his son, born of a woman. Born of a woman? You know what happened in that moment? He became a next of kin to us. Because before that, he was just the darling of heaven. And then he became the son of God, but the son of man. And he became our next of kin, our relative, our kinsman, redeemer. And he was born under law, it says, which means that he lived this perfect life, perfectly righteous. He was spotless, and that's exactly what was needed for our redemption, because it had to be a spotless lamb. We talk about the right for Jesus to redeem us. He had all the right. In fact, not only did he have all the right, no one else has the right. He's the only one that has the right. And then Ephesians 1, 7, when we consider the resource, it says this, in him we have redemption through his blood. You see, because when we speak about the resource of Jesus, he didn't come with a whole bunch of resources. He didn't come with money bags. He didn't come with anything other than himself. He himself was the resource. By his blood, we have redemption. And he offered himself. So right resource. Did he have the resolve? Did he have the resolve? What a question. My son, oldest son Mark, is 12 years old. Landed up in a little bit of an altercation with a 21-year-old. And he did cross the line. There was banter, there was a whole bunch of kids and this guy. But this guy lost it. In a moment of weakness, he just lost it. And he picked Mark up like this, pushed him up against the wall and threatened him. As jy dit weer doen, gaan ek jou expletive. My boy was petrified. Because this man, twice his size, with arms as big as this, picked him up off the floor and threatened him. So I get the call. I get in my car. I go to where he is. Not Mark. This other guy. And I see him from a distance, and I'm like, come here. And I introduce myself. I don't give my name. I just say I'm Mark's dad. Talk. And instead of apologizing, he starts telling me about Mark and what the wrong he did. I'm like, are you kidding me? I came so close. I mean, Nehemiah juices flowing all the way through me. But we resolved that. We ended with the agreement that that would never, ever happen again. Don't you come anywhere near my boy. Since then, he's actually been a delight, been very kind to my boy. So we settled that. But you know, when I walked back to my car, kind of felt like God said to me, you know that thing that was stirring inside of you, yeah? Like you couldn't quite contain it. It was like you were popping on the inside. And I was. I said, yeah? Yeah. I mean, I just felt that. I know that was serious emotion. That was like, I've never felt like that before. I felt like God said, you know what, if you take the flesh out and you take that feeling and you put it into the infinite character that I am, you have just a glimpse of how I feel about you when the enemy comes anywhere near you. Does he have the resolve? Yes. See, that's why when we read scripture, I think we get so used to it. For God so loved the world that he gave his only son. Actually, it's for God so loved. The only thing that got me to that place of confronting that guy that was actually bigger than me was because I so love my boy. Don't you ever come near him again. See what great love the Father has lavished upon us. His love, this loving kindness that's used to describe Boaz, the same for God. Only now we're talking about God the Father. And it's carried in the heart of his son Jesus as he comes to earth. And his resolve gets him to the point of offering his life and being on a cross. And it's his resolve that keeps him there because he had all the resources to get himself off that cross. Does he have the resolve? Absolutely. Now, I don't know where you are at in your life. You might feel like Ruth the Moabite, being excluded, feeling empty, feeling bitter, not sure about your future. And I'm not even talking about the future life on this earth. I'm talking about eternity. Where you have, you don't know where to turn to. Your circumstances are caving in on you. Do you feel like that? See, that's tonight I just want to tell you about this ultimate Boaz. His name's Jesus. King Jesus. Because God didn't just sort the problem of not having a king. He provided his son to be the king. And when you make King Jesus king of your life, when you put your faith in him, when you turn to him, the redemptive work of God just unfolds. And it might take time. There might be chapters, but it's the only way. And he's the only one that you can turn to, because only he has the right. And the last thing I want to say to you is something of what Janie was sharing. I think someone shared it. We have an opportunity to be a Boaz. You see, when you encounter the love of God and you come into a relationship with him, you have the right to be a part of God's redemptive story. That's why Jesus said, all authority has been given unto me, therefore go. We don't go in our own authority, we go in his authority. But the point is, we get to go. We have the right. Do we have the resource? Absolutely. Because God has given us a life that involves time and treasure and talents. But not only that, we've got the story. That story that's changed our lives, I'm speaking to believers now. We've got the Boaz story. And through the city, we are continuously being confronted with Ruth's and Naomi's and the bitterness of life and the emptiness. We've got the story of the ultimate Kinsman Redeemer. Do we have the resource? Absolutely. So if we've got the right and we've got the resource, the real question is, do we have the resolve? And we don't get the resolve by cranking it up. We only get the resolve when we get to understand the love of the Father that he has for us. So when Paul writes to the Ephesians and he says, I pray that you will grasp how wide, how deep, how long, I forget all the adjectives, the love of God is. Because when you grasp it, you will have a knowing that surpasses knowledge. See, I want that knowing. I don't want to know it here. That's knowledge. I want a knowing where it's flowing through me. I want a knowing where it's a part of my life. Because when I become more like Christ and I have more of the character of God flowing through me, that's when I have the resolve. I do not want to die with potential. I do not want to be this kind of naff Christian that's only worried about my own estate, like a no-name Kinsman Redeemer. Oh no, sorry, I cannot do it because that will endanger my estate. To heck with that. I want to risk it all for the sake of the kingdom, for the sake of the gospel. Well, we have the right and the resource, but let me charge you, will you trust that God puts a deposit in your heart that you will have the resolve to be the Boaz in a city that desperately needs it for God's redemptive purpose, in Jesus' name. Amen.